Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to The Love Code. This is a program that is designed to inspire, uplift, transform, and heal you. It's all about opening to the many spiritual traditions and their role in allowing us to expand into a greater connection with who we are, and that's always the key to transform your life on all levels. So I am so thrilled you are here with me today. We have a wonderful conversation in store for you. If you are listening for the very first time, I invite you to go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman. I always like to spell it S-H-E-R-R-I-L-L. Two R's and two L's there, Selman, S-E-L-L-M-A-N, because if you opt in there, I actually send this show out to you. And I also have another show on Progressive Radio Network called What Women Must Know, and that's a great opportunity to learn more about your health and relationships and really the expansion of your personal growth and development. So that show will come to you in your inbox. This show will come to your inbox if you opt into Dr. Cheryl Selman. Or you can go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. I post both these shows there as well. So it's just a convenience for you. You don't have to listen live time. You don't have to search through the archives here. You can go and find the latest show on my Facebook page or see it in your inbox if you go to drcherylselman.com. So I recently had the wonderful opportunity to interview Dr. Alberto Villoldo. Now, I've interviewed him several times. He was on both my shows. He's just such an amazing man, so inspiring, such a beautiful being. And he suggested in my conversation with him that I contact a very special woman named Spring Washam. And he said that I would really enjoy connecting with her. So I always listen to those kinds of suggestions from wise people, and I kind of take it as a sign. So I immediately followed up. So guess who is going to be my guest today? It's Spring Washam who's going to be here. I'm so happy to have her. We had a great conversation. We met each other. And we're going to be talking about the power of fusing ancient traditions of Buddhism and plant spirit medicine, both of which I personally follow in my life. I have been following a Buddhist path. I can't say I've been following a Buddhist path as a serious, committed student, but I bring the Buddhist values and teachings into my life. And many of you know that I also have been on a path working with plant medicine and the shamanic traditions out of Peru, and I now go to Costa Rica to Rhythmia, which is another wonderful experience and opportunity to tap into the power of plant medicine. So these are paths that I have been on personally, and I was so inspired when I had my conversation with Spring. I wanted to invite her on to share her journey with us. So first of all, let me say a little bit about Spring. Spring Washam is a well-known meditation teacher, author, and visionary leader based in Los Angeles, California. She is the author of A Fierce Heart, Finding Strength, Courage, and Wisdom in Any Moment. Spring is considered a pioneer in bringing mindfulness-based healing practices to diverse communities. She is one of the founding teachers of the East Bay Meditation Center located in Oakland, California. She is also the co-founder of a new organization called Communities Rising, which is dedicated to providing yoga and meditation teacher training programs for underserved communities. She received extensive training by Jack Kornfield and is a member of the Teachers Council at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Northern California. She has practiced and studied Buddhist philosophy in both the Theravada and Tibetan schools of Buddhism for the past 20 years. In addition to being a teacher, she has been published in many magazines and journals, and she has been a guest on many popular podcast and radio shows. She currently travels and teaches meditation retreats, workshops, and classes worldwide, as well as organizing retreats for plant medicine and Buddhism in Peru. So it is my great pleasure to welcome Spring to the show today. Hello, Spring.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show, and it was such a pleasure to connect with you through Alberto's recommendation, and he was so right. You know, it was just a wonderful opportunity to meet another, you know, kindred spirit on the path. So thank you for sharing this time with us, and you're doing such inspirational work. I know from what I have learned about you, you know, you are such a prime mover in bringing meditation, mindfulness meditation, into communities, into the world, and into people's lives, and other things as well, which we will talk about. So my first question for you is, what was it about your journey, Spring? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you arrived at being such a dedicated teacher of Buddhism.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think on some level, we all get on a spiritual path, or many of us, who is really suffering, right? And the sort of quest to end the suffering. And I think in that way, it all kind of started when I was really young. And I write about that in my book, and just a lot of childhood traumas and struggles. And as a very young person, I had a very strong inclination for spirituality, psychology. I remember, you know, when I was 15 and 16, reading books on how to heal your mind. You know, I kind of understood, like, something's going on with my mind and also other people's minds. You know, that was a really clear insight. And so it was out of that, you know, I just started really searching to try to understand, why was there so much suffering in my family? Why was I feeling so badly? And that sort of made me, and also a lot of trauma, that made me start to study meditation. And I was practicing meditation for many years, and then kind of stumbled onto a 10-day retreat where I ended up meeting my first and also very important mentor, a teacher named Jack Kornfield. So there was that was a huge shift for me. That was a huge stepping stone and a pivotal relationship, and it has been for many years. But that sort of really got me on the path in a way.
And how old were you when that happened?
So I was about 24 years old, so 20 years ago. Yep. It was my first 10-day retreat where I could say, like, I had a kind of a spiritual awakening, not enlightenment or anything like that. It was just basically I made the decision that I would follow a spiritual life. That's what, something awoke in me that was like, this is the path. This is what I want to do. The teachings of the Buddha really resonated with me. You know, present moment awareness, mindfulness, compassion, letting go. All of these things made a lot of sense to me, and they were practices that I really wanted to do. You know, I just connected to the whole path in that way.
So tell us more about mindfulness meditation. When people think of Buddhism, you know, I'm not sure what people think of when they think of Buddhism. We all have our own concepts and images and pictures, right? What is it about Buddhism that attracts so many people? It resonates with me as well. What are some of the basic teachings? You kind of briefly mentioned it just a little bit ago, but can we delve into it a little bit more so people can appreciate and understand why Buddhism has become such a powerful force for finding not only more peace, but a way of how to move through this world?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, a great topic for viewers, because they might hear the word Buddhism and immediately maybe they think of, you know, monks or, you know, an exotic location in the Himalayas or, you know, they may think, oh no, I have to join something or wear beads or, you know, so many times.
Shave my head.
Yeah, shave my hair, renounce my husband or partners, give away all my money. You know, like we have these crazy ideas about it. And what's funny is when we opened our center in downtown Oakland, I taught so many people entry-level beginner classes on understanding Buddhist psychology. And I would always tell them, okay, you don't have to become anything. I want you to imagine that the Buddha is your psychiatrist, okay? Very skillful. And I think what is helpful about Buddhism is about its emphasis on suffering and overcoming suffering. You know, there's something so important about the conversation of like just recognizing, hey, there is suffering here in this human life. No matter how much money I have, no matter how great I look on the outside, it points to this universal truth that we all experience pain. We all experience things that we don't want. We all have moments of getting sick. And it goes on to help us to understand how to reduce that suffering, right? Clinging and attachment and holding on. And how important it is to train the mind to begin to rest in the present moment. So we let go of the grasping mind. And so I think the introduction of Buddhism with this wave of sort of self-help and neuroscience and psychology has made this tradition extremely accessible to people of all faiths, all walks of life. Buddhism is a type of, it's more of a philosophy than a religion. It's not anything that you have to become or do. It's something that you investigate. Does this feel true? Ah, yes. Or are these practices helpful? So the foundation is really, in Buddhism, is about how to let go of suffering. That's really the whole, all of the practices are geared toward that. We generate compassion so that we can let go of self-hatred. We learn about interconnectedness so that we understand, you know, that we're all in this world sharing together. We develop qualities of mind and heart through practicing them. But mostly we learn about how to be a sane human being, which means not listening to our crazy mind all the time. You know, I think that's really something that's so important right now. And people are longing for, what do I do with my mind? I'm so stressed out, or my thinking is out of control, or, you know, these are modern problems that affect all of us very deeply, our mental health. So in some way, I think of Buddhism as an antidote, as a medicine. It's like mental health training in some way. Not for everything, but it can definitely help a lot. And people are discovering that for themselves.
Because Buddhism is a 2,500-year-old tradition of finding the key to eliminate suffering. That's really the primary or one of the primary teachings. I think Buddhism has traveled throughout many countries and has taken many forms of how it is expressed, but the essence is, what is our exit door of suffering? And that is something that everyone really is seeking. How do we get out of the pain, the traumas, the feeling of insecurities, the angers, the thoughts, those consistent thoughts that plague us, our mind is going all the time, which is really what ultimately is generating what we call suffering, this lack of peace that we can carry. We have the potential to live in a world of peace. So I think that's so fascinating. It's like, what happened? What happened, Spring, that we lost this? Why do we have to spend so much time and energy and practices to recover something that seems to be innate within us?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the question of the hour, isn't it? I mean, you could look at our Christian mythology. You know, when I was younger, I was always like, why did, you know, why were we thrown out of Eden? You know, they blame it on the woman, but it's like, okay, you know, that doesn't seem fully accurate. But it's that, like, why, if there's all this peace available, why does it feel like we're always cast out? And I think that this is a great question, and maybe it's that question that motivates many of us to remember. You know, it's like we have to go, what they call in Buddhism, there is this famous line where the Buddha says, to practice the awakened heart, one must go against the stream. Like the stream is going down and we're going up, like trying to wake up or remember or live our values. And, you know, in Buddhism, there's a lot of focus on cultivating the heart, compassion, ethics, living with integrity. It's a whole path in a way of refraining from planting seeds of suffering. And we don't do it because we believe we get struck by lightning if we don't, or there'll be some kind of horrible thing happens. It's that I think a wise person, a truly wise being, understands what leads to suffering and what leads to happiness. And they no longer plant the seeds that lead to suffering. And greed, hatred, delusion, that's just planting the seeds of pain. And so what we're trying to do is, people want to be happy, they have to know the causes of happiness, right? We want to be peaceful, then we know we have to live our life in accordance with that. And so in some way, Buddhism is just that, it's a very simple training. And there's a magic that happens the more you live in the present moment. The more we live in the present moment in our body, this natural sanity, this clarity starts to emerge in us. So I find that very inspiring.
It is very inspiring. And Buddhism and these concepts and some of the practices are really compatible with all religions. And many religions have adopted them and incorporate them in how they teach and what their congregation is practicing. It's kind of, it kind of merges with many traditions, including psychotherapy. Psychotherapy has adopted so many of the practices of Buddhism to help people understand and have practical tools to find more peace in their lives. So let's talk about some of the practices of Buddhism. What are some of the things you teach in a beginner's course to people? So someone who's never experienced Buddhism, looking to either just out of curiosity or because they are agitated in their life, they're, you know, stressed out in their lives, and they don't know how to get out of that stressful energy that is causing them distress, could be causing physical health, could be interfering in their relationships and their ability to do their work. How do you begin?
Well, you know, with a big sort of a beginner, and again, what's funny is, what is beginner is also the end too. It's like it's always practical. But often I begin with people is teaching them how to meditate by just simply sitting still and following the breath. So just allowing the mind to quiet, you know, so much of our life is so full with so many things coming, whether it's a phone or kids or work or drive, you know, our lives are, there's this busyness, this kind of frenetic energy of doing. So it's very hard for us to sit still and just kind of be with ourselves moment by moment. So as an entry, I just kind of teach people how to begin to find a little bit of stillness. You know, it's like a Coke bottle that you just shake up. We're like that all the time, right? And so the sitting becomes just a way to find some stillness, follow the breath, relax. And so we're not so caught up in the thinking mind, you know. So that's, I mean, what I've learned and understand about myself and others is I teach them a lot about working with thoughts skillfully and how much we believe thought and how much power thoughts have over us. when we're unconscious, and how when we just begin to sit and relax and settle into the heart and the mind, there's a happiness, a kind of contentedness comes, because we're not caught up in our stories and our thinking. I don't know about you, but most of the people I work with, the stories that they tell all day long are nightmares. They're not beautiful stories. They're stories of suffering, stories of I'm not good enough, of shame, of blame, of, right? And we're telling ourselves these things all day long, and the body is just responding, right? So it starts to carry this anxiety and suffering, and it just becomes a pattern, a deeply embedded pattern. So the first thing we do is we just begin by just stopping. We just press the pause button, even if it's just for one moment, and we just, okay, let's turn everything off for one moment and just pause. We start there, and believe it or not, that pausing and stopping has a profound effect on people. Now, that pause can come when you're in the middle of a yoga class. It can come when you're out walking. It can come when you're looking at a beautiful, you know, tree in the forest. It can come at any moment, but what we're doing is we're starting to do it by formally training the mind, by actually having a period where we say, for this 10 minutes, I'm going to stop, and I'm just going to be, and I'm going to breathe. So it seems like a small thing. It seems like a simple thing, but actually it's very powerful.
And it just reminds me as you're talking that, you know, we come into this life and we have our experiences, but we never receive a manual of how to live a peaceful life, how to manage our mind, right? How to be a master of our life, how to be the creator of our life. We are at effect of all these thoughts and the programmings that go on, and they are programmings that happen. I mean, there are certain pathways that get initiated by experiences, and they get played over and over again. So we are never given the key of how to change the programming from one of that nightmare of pain and suffering. I'm not good enough, you know. Whatever the numbers that we run on ourselves are, but that's, you know, that's what's so beautiful about tools like Buddhism, because Buddhism is based on the experience of this real man who wanted to find the key to emerge out of suffering and find his real self, and he did it, and he left a path to follow. You know, he gave instructions once he got there that are eternal.
Right. I know. I for me, I love Buddhism. I love every other tradition. I can, you know, traditions that cultivate this quality of contemplative living, slowing down. I think all of the world traditions have that side. I think what's unique about Buddhism is it's practiced so much. You know, you go to a retreat, a Buddhist-based retreat, you're going to learn how to, you know, be still, maybe silent even, and practice mindfulness for hours a day and sitting and walking. So it just goes a bit farther. It gives us a real way to look at what's happening in the mind. And when we can look at what's going on in the mind, then we have some power. We're not run by the crazy part anymore. We start to see it for what it is. Ah, right. Okay, I can choose what I want to pay attention to. I can choose what I want to put, where I want to place my awareness. And that brings a lot of power back. So many people feel helpless. Right, we're just run by this kind of energy of the mind and the stories, and we feel, you know, and it, I mean, so many Americans are depressed, and there's anxiety, and, you know, this is, mental health is a huge issue, and having tools to be able to, no matter what your tradition is, you can apply, you know, mindfulness, mindfulness-based stress reduction, and body-based awareness to any faith-based tradition.
You know, I'll give you a little example of how it's impacted me, because I went to a 10-day Vipassana silent retreat, which is a form of Buddhism. and it was silence, and it taught you how to, you know, breathe and how to follow the breath and how to follow the sensations you kind of move through your body and just notice. It's a big lesson in learning to notice and not judge and not label. That to me is
right.
So profound. So I was sitting there, it was towards the end of those 10 days, and I was sitting, and all of a sudden I realized, like, my back was so sore. I was in a lot of discomfort. And I said, well, okay, I've been practicing this for almost 10 days. Let's see if it works. So I just withdrew labels. I didn't call it pain. I didn't say back pain. I just practiced what I was taught, which is observe sensations. Observe the sensations that are happening in that area of your body. Just be curious. So it's like you are the observer. And something miraculous happened, because when I did that, the experience of pain disappeared. I had an experience of sensations going on in my body, but it was not pain and it was not discomfort. And the whole thing shifted, and it was so profound. And that experience has stayed with me ever since. And when I have some discomfort going on in my body, and it's kind of extrapolated into emotions as well, when I have something that's causing me pain, I practice observing the sensations, observing it, observing where it's going on in my body. You know, is it hot, cold, how much of it, you know, is it a tingling, it's whatever. Observe all those qualities. And this, when you can observe it rather than say, I'm in pain, when you observe it and saying, I am having a pain or I'm having a sensation, the whole experience changes. And it has been successful every single time I have used that to deal with either some pain or some psychological or emotional pain. And it's one of the most valuable things I've ever been taught. So I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, I've had similar experiences for sure. Yeah, just learning how to be aware of something versus caught in something. Right, aware of what's happening versus just reacting to what's happening. And that just, it just gives us a lot of freedom there to choose and to have moments where we're awake, we're noticing what's going on. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful, simple to do, and people can, you know, find YouTubes, they can buy DVDs, there's, you know, programs galore. I recently had Jon Kabat-Zinn on my show, who brought this whole Buddhist tradition into the medical field, and he said like 700 different medical institutions are instituting Buddhist practices, teachings, people with chronic illnesses who are getting tremendous results, sometimes healing, sometimes just relief of chronic pain. But he's bringing it, you know, that's his mission, and he's done it so well, is bringing it into the mainstream world and teaching people how to do some of these very simple but practical tools.
Yes, he's amazing, and his work is, it's transforming lives. And again, it's just about learning how to be present and aware. You know, it's beyond a religion. It's just a universal principle. You know, so
yeah.
But it's wonderful to see it moving out into the mainstream. We certainly could use more mindfulness in our culture in general, and more compassion, of course.
Yeah. You know, I think I previous conversation with you, I was saying how intrigued I am with the country of Bhutan, because the country of Bhutan, which most people don't even know where it exists, a little country between China and India, stuck up there kind of in the Himalayas, and it's a totally Buddhist country, and they embody the values. So everything about their culture is finding peace, operating with compassion towards themselves, towards the animals, towards the land. And in Bhutan, they have a minister for happiness. And 97% of people in Bhutan who've been polled believe and say they experience happiness. They have this gross national happiness. So it's a fascinating place, which I actually hope to organize a tour in 2020. I've been working on that. I want to go. I want to experience an ancient land that has successfully incorporated the Buddhist values into every aspect of their culture. I think it's such a special place, right?
Yeah, so many people have visited. Me too. Mm-hmm.
Right. So let's kind of move on to the other piece that has been a key part of your life and what you have been doing in your journey and what you've been sharing with other people, and that's the path of the traditional healing medicine from Peru, from the Amazon, that works with the plants, plant medicine, specifically ayahuasca. And you have been organizing these retreats, these two-week retreats, where you bring people to experience the power of plant medicine, and then you also incorporate Buddhist teachings and practices. Tell us how you got there. How did you get into this world with shaman and the traditional spirituality of the Amazon and the Shipibo people?
Yeah, so I'll first say that the conversation for many people is still controversial. You know, I'm still, you know, where with a lot of my colleagues, they don't quite know what to make of me. What am I doing with these plants? But I'll say that, you know, I started working, with ayahuasca in particular 10 years ago, and it was honestly in response to trauma. I was on a very long meditation retreat. I went on a 3-month meditation retreat. I was already at, teaching at that time, and we had opened our community in Oakland. I was supposed to be, you know, leading things, and I ended up going on a 3-month retreat, and I fell apart on that retreat. I just hit this trauma. And 10 years ago, there wasn't as much information about trauma as there is now. We've become way more educated about understanding about PTSD and the effects of trauma and everything about it, how to work with people who are experiencing trauma. But 10 years ago, that wasn't so readily available. So I kind of fell apart on this 3-month course. I had been doing super intense meditation hour after hour after hour. And I couldn't open anymore to what was happening. And so I left the retreat in a destabilized state, which is not common. It can happen if you're doing months and months and months. And it was unusual what happened, but I kept feeling as if this kind of trauma is so deep in my body. It is beyond what I can do. I kept thinking I need another way to work with it. Because at that point, I had been meditating for years. I'd been all over the world. I'd been blessed by great masters. I'd swum with dolphins. I mean, you name it, I did it as far as healing. Yet I knew that there was still this stuck place inside of me. I felt like there was some big piece that I wasn't able to fully access. And so I left that retreat with that awareness and also feeling all this, like, you know, pain and anguish. And a friend of mine, I came back to San Francisco where I was living at the time in California, a clinical psychologist who happened to be a dear friend of mine, met with me and said, you know what, I want you to come to a ceremony. And she described what the ceremony was. There's this plant that I think can help you. It's been helping me. I've been taking it. You know, she'd been working with it for a couple of years, actually secretively. And she said, it's giving me a lot of insight, so much healing. And just come, just keep an open mind. Well, everybody knows that when you hit rock bottom, you're really open, right? You're like, I'll do anything. I'll take that. I'll try that, you know. But one thing I didn't do was Western pharmaceuticals. I knew somehow I could heal myself through natural remedies, or not to say that that's not a good path to follow. I just was reluctant to use a Western medical system. And so I was intrigued by this Amazonian plant that she talked about. So I went to the ceremony, and in an 8-hour curious. I learned more about myself than I had learned in the 2 years prior altogether. So much insight, so much clarity. Really had a powerful night of just profound insight and healing. And I knew at that moment I would go to Peru. And within a month or two, maybe 2 months, 3 months later, I was on my first trip to Peru for an extended visit to learn about where the plants came originally, how they were used, what in the world is this plant. I was completely intrigued and fascinated. And again, that kind of went with my spirit, though. I'd always been interested in plants. You know, I'd been a vegetarian. I was going to study herbalism. You know, I was always interested in how plants can heal you on a mind-body level. So it wasn't far-fetched for me to think, oh, I'll go have these plants in the Amazon now. You know, that wasn't a hard leap for me because I always kind of believed in, I guess, plant consciousness or earth consciousness or, for lack of a better way to put that. But so anyway, I made my way down to Peru, and that's really where the adventure started. And I ended up going there maybe 1 to 2 months a year. I ended up hosting groups at my home. I sort of opened my house up for the work. And then in 2014 to 2015, I moved to the jungle and studied in a Shipibo community at an ayahuasca healing center for a year in the way out in the jungle. And I kind of there, I apprenticed in a way. I learned, I was sort of assisting on every level with the healings that people were going through. And I saw so many miracles, both with myself and with the guests who came, that I knew that I would start my own organization. So when I left 6 months later, I decided that I wanted to work within the Buddhist communities that were already on a spiritual path, and help them by merging, having a retreat that we did meditation and yoga and healthy food, Buddhist philosophy, and then we also worked with plant medicine. We did ceremonies. So that was kind of how Lotus Vine came to be. It was a passion of mine, Buddhism and then the medicine. And it seemed like when I brought the two together, something in my own spirit was accelerating. I was accelerating my insight, accelerating my understanding, letting go of the trauma, letting go of just all the blockages that come from trauma that prevent you from living your full life, from loving yourself, loving others. You know, as we know, trauma, it shuts down the system. And so learning about all the levels of healing has been an odyssey for me and a gift. And so Lotus Vine Journeys has kind of come out of that. We're the first ever Buddhist-based ayahuasca retreat. I haven't seen any others yet, so I love that. And again, some people in the Buddhist world think, oh my gosh, what is she doing? And other people love it. And I just embrace that controversy, you know, and say, well, this is what we're doing. We are accelerating here. People are finding it very, very helpful and very inspiring in their lives. So that's a little bit of that's the short version of the story. And there's a bunch of stuff that happened in between, as you know, working with this whole world, the shamanism, plants, and adventures in South America.
I have been really curious about ayahuasca, and I've talked about this on the show many times with different guests. And it drew me as well, because I've been on a spiritual path for, I would say, 50 years, you know, and had many experiences, and that path led me to explore the spiritual world that was part of this tradition in Peru that used this sacred plant for healing and for spiritual connection. And my first experience was in the Amazon in Peru. That was 4 years ago. And now, you know, I've been going to Costa Rica because it's a little more comfortable for people rather than going into the jungle. Not everyone is happy to explore, you know, the deep jungle, which I actually was. But, you know, it's more basic, I would say.
Yeah.
It doesn't have all the luxuries. Yeah. And not everyone wants to, you know, kind of hit the road in that way. So I, for the past 3 years, I've just completed the third group that has gone to the center in Costa Rica working with shaman and the plant medicine. So let's talk about plant medicine. So for people who don't really know what we're talking about, can you explain what is plant medicine? What is ayahuasca? What is its origin in this tradition in Peru with this indigenous community? Well, you know, help us understand what this spiritual tradition is all about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a question that many of us ask about, like, what in the world is plant medicine and how does this work? And so I would just start off by saying that, you know, ayahuasca is a vine and it grows deep in the jungle. It needs a rainforest and it sort of wraps around trees. And the origins of it, it's a very special brew of two plants, the ayahuasca and then the chacruna vine, or chacruna leaves, brewed together over many days. It's cooked down and it makes this brew. It's not really a tea. It's the cross between honey and water, I guess you could say, the consistency. And it's a mystery where and how it was discovered. It was discovered by indigenous people who have been using it, I think, over 2,000 years. Recently in Peru, they found a cup of ayahuasca, a cup that had ayahuasca remnants in it that they estimated to be 2,000 years old. How I describe ayahuasca, and it's hard for people who are from the West to kind of go there, but it's a doctor. Ayahuasca is a doctor of the spirit doctor. And when things are wrong and we feel sick, or, you know, some of the people who contact me to go on retreats or write to us or reach out to me are people who maybe chronic depression, you know, they have a beautiful life. I mean, I worked with people who had everything you could want, homes, money, looks, everything that they say should make you happy, but were suicidal. Right, it's unknown reasons for in their life. They can't point to anything in particular, but there's this deep pain. Also physical pain. People have gone to 30 doctors and have a chronic pain, and it, you know, it's just not working. So with ayahuasca, it's a spirit doctor, and it's very physical. It's not kind of like LSD or these other, this is a plant that goes deeply into your body. And so it heals on all four levels of the human system. Okay, so the first level is the physical body. So it kind of purges out all the detoxes. It detoxes everything that's in our body, the poisons, fat water, GMO food, alcohol, drugs, all this stuff that's kind of in our cells. It can purge out that. So you hear the nickname with ayahuasca, La Purga. And so, as you know, that's a part of it that we're releasing and we're purging out sort of dark energy, energy that's making us sick, energy that is old. So the first level is it kind of cleans the physical body. The second level that it works on is the emotional level. So sometimes people have this huge buildup of repressed emotion, and that emotion can come from trauma, from abuse, from being shamed, blamed, hurt, abandoned. We have, like, you know, Eckhart Tolle talks about it as the pain body. We have this emotional body that is just full for some people, right? Full of sadness, anger, hurt, jealousy. so that the plants can come in on the emotional level, and it can help us to release all of that energy. So it kind of cleans the emotional level. That's the second level that the plants work on. The third level is the mental level. So this is like kind of more also what I like to work with the plants and Buddhism together, because the mental level is kind of where our insanity is started, like the stories that we believe, the thoughts that we think that are distorted, that are based on greed, that are based on hatred and delusion. We start to uproot all of the lies, the conditioning, and the programming that we have soaked up in our culture, our family of origin, our gender, our race. All of these programs come with, you know, that we're born into, our ancestors, our DNA. So we sort of sort through the chaos of the mental level. What am I thinking and what am I believing about myself and other beings, right? So the plants kind of come in and they sort of pull out all the delusions we have. So often you hear people in ceremony will say, oh my God, I had brain surgeries, or I saw the matrix, or all these files were getting pulled out. And all they know is that later they start to feel better, right? Oh, I'm more compassionate. I'm more kind. There's clarity. There's lightness, right? As the mind starts to get cleansed, this happiness comes. And that's why I love to work with it with entering in Buddhism, because we're also adding in the, you know, teachings of truth, of clarity and wisdom, working with the plants in that way. And then the fourth level, I'll just mention really briefly, is what I call the vibrational level. Now, this is the level where anytime we've had a trauma, whether it was an accident, blunt force, sexual abuse, physical abuse, surgeries, anything that has happened to us throughout our entire life, even going back into when we were in the womb, it can leave a residue on our light body or our astral body. And so what happens is that's where a lot of knots get tied up, chronic pain, knots, places where we can't move our body fully, or injuries that never healed. It all kind of gets stuck in our light body, our vibrational body. And this is where I think the plants are the most effective, is they can come in and they can, especially ayahuasca, they can clear entities, energy, dark things, stuck energies that are kind of lodged in our energy body. So the energy body is the body, is sort of what acupressure, acupuncture, qigong, all those energy arts, they're also focused on the energy body. So we use a lot of that. Yoga, you know, we imagine the light body cleansing everything out of this level of the body. And so that's kind of what ayahuasca is good for. It's a medicine. I never use the word drug. That just doesn't apply. I don't use the word psychedelic. I use the word plant medicine. Entheogen is another word that I might use. And I think the benefits of people who are able and ready to work with ayahuasca, it can be very, very helpful for them. So that's kind of a little bit of a long answer, but yeah, amazing plant, actually.
Well, I think that was a great answer, because it is an amazing gift from nature. And this plant and this combination, this sprue, I always ask that question. How, you know, I mean, you know, millions of plants in the Amazon. How was this plant discovered? Did it talk to people? Did it ask to be found? I mean, how, you know, how did this happen? And no one has the answer other than, you know, this culture is so attuned to nature that they actually can talk to the plants. But it's not just finding these two plants, very specific plants. It's also how it's brewed to make it effective, and how you have to, you know, cook it up and chant and pray and do it for a period of time. It's just fascinating. But what I want to say, and what you did a beautiful job with, Spring, is really explaining that this is a sacred medicine. This is based on a tradition that is closely connected to nature. And the experiences that I've had with this medicine and the teachers that I've had with this medicine are always saying that this medicine, it's like Mother Earth. It's a representative from Mother Earth wanting us to reconnect again to our true self, which is connected to nature. You know, we spend latest statistic is 93% of our lives are spent indoors. Indoors. When in the history of humanity have people spent 93% of their times inside, not connected to nature, not connected to the rhythms, the seasons, you know, the sunshine, the, you know, walking on the earth. And what the plant medicine is so beautiful at doing is allowing us to reconnect to ourselves, reconnect to nature, and to heal those places that have disconnected us, and all those levels. And you've seen this, and I've seen this. People have come with physical illness. People have been cured of all sorts of health issues, all chronic health issues. I have to say, even cancers. People have been healed of post-traumatic stress, of childhood trauma, sexual abuse, abandonment, being caught up in war-torn countries. There's a woman who came in my last group who saw, she escaped from Iran. She saw her family being killed, her cousin being executed. This is a huge trauma. What do people do? I mean, really, all of us are victims of trauma. If not this lifetime, our parents have, our grandparents have. We all carry trauma, and it impacts us, and it can lead to disease or dysfunction in some way. And the amazing, you know, just incredible gift and power of this spiritual plant is to free us of our traumas, reconnect us again. It's so incredible. It's so incredible, isn't it? So incredible.
I've been in probably several hundred ayahuasca ceremonies just over the 10 years as a facilitator, with group after group, and I'm always in the middle of it, amazed. And also at the end of the retreats, you know, as people are leaving, they're like, wow, what in the, how does this happen? You know, how is this happening? And all I know is that I do believe it's just connected deeply to what you're saying, is this reconnection to the earth. If we don't wake up to that, we will destroy it. You know, we will. It's because we don't understand it. We don't see we're connected to that. And I love that, you know, people often ask me, are you going to do ceremony in L.A. somewhere? And I think, for right now, I need to be on that river. We need to be, you know, out on the earth. We need to be, and we don't do it outside. We do it in the Maloka. It's beautiful, but it's, you know, it's there on the land. And for right now, that feels where I need to be with it, where I think people can get the most benefit from being in nature, you know, so. So, it will always be a mystery to me, how it works.
it is. And I just want to say that there is more and more awareness about ayahuasca, about ceremonies where you drink ayahuasca. And I always want to caution people. It is not a recreational experience. It's a sacred experience. It has to be conducted in a sacred way by people who are trained in the tradition, have had traditional training, not just on a lot of ceremonies. And that's why I personally, you know, love going to Peru. Now I do it in the center in Costa Rica that is, you know, monitored, and people are trained and the whole process is guided. You know, and I just have to say that because people may get really curious and think, well, this is something I want to do. And then they hear something's happening in their community and do a night. You know, it's like, no, you just do not want to go there. You want to do it in a proper environment with people who are properly trained and in a safe place, and do a series of them. It's not just a one-shot deal. You know, it's you do 2 weeks and you do 7 journeys. Where I take people, yeah. It's 1 week and it's 4 journeys. And it's a process. It's not just one-time experience. It works because you are peeling back aspects and layers of yourself to really get to the, you know, your diamond nature inside. So I just I just need to say that to people listening.
Yeah, and I really want to echo that too, that it is not, the one thing that I have learned and that is different in the West is we don't have an understanding of ceremony here, right? That was, we don't fully understand that, but these plants must be used in safe ways, set in settings, is instrumental in the healing process. So to be with loving people, to be with a guide, to be with someone who understands the plan, who leads the group, who can be supporting you if there's things arise that you need help with, who, it's very, very important. So I can't underestimate that enough as well.
Yeah. So we're kind of coming to the end of our time together, and I just want to say that what you have done that's unique with your long history, 20-year history of not just practicing Buddhism, but being a teacher of Buddhism, and then your path that led you into the jungles of the Amazon, Peru, and studying with shaman, incorporating this path of healing with plant medicine is really unique in how you've brought all this together, and it just seems to fit really well, actually. It's just like a natural fit.
Well, for me, it makes complete sense. Yes.
Yeah. Makes sense to me, too. So we have about a minute left. Spring, is there anything? By the way, I want people to visit Spring's website, which is Spring Washam. It's Spring, and Washam is W-A-S-H-A-M, washam.com. Pick up a copy of her book, A Fierce Heart, Finding Strength, Courage, and Wisdom in Any Moment. And is there one last thing you want to say in the minute we have left?
And I would say if people were interested in this combination of Buddhist practice and plant medicine, they can look up Lotus Vine Journeys. And that's the name of the organization, the Lotus, or the Buddhist icon of lotus and vine for the medicine and the journey to Peru. They could check us out online on our social media, our website, our YouTube channel. It's all there.
Beautiful. And Spring, it's just been a real pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for sharing your compassion and your wisdom with us today. It's just always special to have these conversations. So thank you so much for the great work you're doing.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been great.
So thank my listeners for joining me today, and I hope you'll be returning next week for another conversation on the Love Code. Until then, have a wonderful, beautiful, peaceful, blessed week, and remember to have a week filled with love, peace, and happiness. Bye for now.